once again, and welcome to episode 17 of Bee Boomer Unleashed. I'm your host, Jerry Lake, the Unleashed Baby Boomer, and we're happy to be back with you again, sinus explosion and all. The pollen is still flying, and we're still a little bit congested here from all that, but we'll muddle through and just have patience with us, bear with us, and we'll get through episode 17 here, which is going to be, once again, a continuation of our discussion on the evolution of the local church and Christian values, and today's subtitle, I guess we could call it The Sexual Revolution and the Church. And you remember the sexual revolution, and we'll talk about that and how it changed the church and how it changed the way we looked at things as we go through this discussion. Before we do, though, let me always remind you, as we have before, you can always find our podcast on beboomerunleashed.podbean.com. You can find us on iTunes and Instagram and Facebook and Spotify and Tumblr. You can find us there at beboomerunleashed, and you can find us on Twitter at beboomerunleash1. And as always, be sure that you send us emails to beboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. beboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Now, let's get back to this discussion on the evolution of the church and Christian values, and more particularly the sexual revolution. Now, I would be remiss if I didn't go back just a little bit to last week's episode when we talked about the church of the 1950s and some of the things we could have learned from that church of the 50s. But I'd like to put you in remembrance of that church of the 50s. The leadership in that church, remember when we talked about generational differences, the leadership of that church were the greatest generation or the silent generation. And we talked about those in our discussion and how those life characteristics made their life choices different and how the baby boomers differed from that greatest generation. Now, if you'll remember the leaders of that church in the 50s from that generation, some of their characteristics were that they were loyal to a fault. They had very few career changes. They stayed with the same. They got a job and they stayed with it. They had tremendous core values. Their core values stayed with them for a lifetime. They weren't tossed to and fro about every wind of doctrine, if you will, but they had these core values ingrained in them, and they were loyal to those core values. This was a sacrificing generation. You remember how they sacrificed in World War II, and they went to foreign soil to fight a battle on foreign soil and offer up their lives as sacrifices so that we might have the lifestyle that we have today. And guess what? They were also family focused. That generation was very family focused. Not a lot of divorce back in the 50s. Not a lot of divorce. They stuck with that person for a lifetime. And most of those great generation people celebrated 50th anniversaries, and some of them 60th anniversaries and 75th anniversaries. My mom and dad, before my dad passed away in 2012, had been married for 64 years. My wife and I were married 46 years this year. Now, we're kind of unusual for baby boomers, but that was not unusual for that greatest generation because they were loyal. They sacrificed. And that had a lot to do with the climate at their local church. Remember we said that local church back in the 50s was a community church, and they were involved in their communities, and those local churches were a reflection of the values held in common by those folks in the greatest generation. And as we said, a large church back in that day would be 125 people. That would be a big church. You know, it's not uncommon for churches to have 40, 50, 60 members, but a big church back then would be about 125. So that was the generation who was primarily in leadership positions, that church in the 50s. And that's why that church, I think, was the way it was back in the 50s. Now, their method of church growth was to invite people to come to church. They talked to people about Jesus. They had revival meetings where they usually had a spring and a fall revival, where they would invite people in from the community to hear an evangelist give gospel messages, and many times churches grew from that aspect. And so they were actively trying to reach their community members with the gospel of Christ, and that's what they were all about. what are some of the things they did? Well, you know, in our church, it's called different things in different denominations, but I grew up in a Baptist church, and we had an organization called BYF. It was Baptist Youth Fellowship. And those greatest generation folks, my parents and parents like my parents, planned activities. They sacrificed their own time to have activities so that we would be involved with the church and with the community. You know, today, you know, we just hire a youth pastor. Let him figure it out. We don't care. You know, we hire a youth pastor. That's what you're getting paid for. You do it well. Back in those days, it was very unusual to have an assistant pastor or a youth pastor. You had one pastor for the church, and most of them were bivocational. It wasn't a career. They got some sort of financial stipend, but it wasn't a full-time occupation. Most of them worked at another job. They worked at a factory. They worked for the railroad. They were builders. They were whatever it was, but they were actively involved in that church, but were not on the full-time staff. So to have an assistant pastor, well, no. So as the baby boomers took over in the 60s and the 70s, and we're going to talk next week, hopefully, about the 70s and the growth of the megachurch, baby boomers were very ambitious. They were educated, you know, and most of us went to liberal colleges. And we received that liberal indoctrination. We were rebellious. Man, we rebelled against everything. We rebelled against society, against parents, against the government, against the Vietnam War. You know, we were a rebellious lot. We questioned everything. One of the things that are distinctive about the baby boomers, we questioned everything. Why? Why you got to do that? What's that for? Why not do it this way instead? And remember, baby boomers were all about personal gratification. We liked shiny things. So when you get into the 60s, some of the baby boomers were coming of age and taking more leadership positions in the church. Now, this really snowballs in the 70s. And when we get into the 70s, the age of the megachurch, and talk about why that movement took place, you're going to see how that generational difference between the greatest generation, or that silent generation, and the baby boomers had a tremendous part to play in church development and the way churches reached people with the gospel. And you're gonna hear a lot about that in our next episode when we talk about church life in the 1970s. Well, now in the 50s, like I said, loyal, greatest generation, core values. They had their kids involved. They took an active role in the youth program. We didn't have youth pastors. Our parents took care of that. We had ice cream socials. When's the last time you heard of a church having an ice cream social? Every once in a while, you'll see somebody advertising an ice cream social where you invited the community at large in to eat homemade ice cream. And you didn't have to be a member of the church to come and enjoy the free ice cream. They invited everybody in, and they would have somebody sitting up on a wagon playing gospel music with guitars and banjos or whatever. And it was just a good time. We had all kinds of plays at church. We had an Easter play. We had a Christmas play. We had all these pageants that the kids were involved in. And it was a great time. If you've never read the book, Greatest Christmas Pageant Ever, I suggest you read it, or at least watch the movie if you're not a reader. But The Greatest Christmas Pageant Ever, quite a show. And it reminds me a lot of the old Christmas plays back when I was a kid growing up. We had car washes. You know, we would have a fund that we were trying to raise money for some missionary, or raise money for something around the church, or some youth trip or something. We had car washes, and guess what? The people in the community showed up to get their car washed. The people in the community, whether they were a member of that church or not, showed up to get their car washed. Now, today, most kids don't know how to wash a car. Most adults don't know how to wash a car. We put $10 in a coin machine, and we run it through an automatic car wash, or we go where somebody is running an automatic car wash, and then they wipe our car off when we come out. So, you know, even adults today don't know much about washing cars. Remember the last car wash I was involved in, I was a sponsor of the National Junior Honor Society at Barbersfield Middle School, and the kids wanted to have a car wash. I said, okay. We'll have a car wash. So we got lined up at the Pizza Hut. Local Pizza Hut allowed us to use their driveway and free water to wash cars. And they didn't know any more about wash cars. I had to wash most of them because they had no clue what they were doing. And so I'm sure it would be even worse today. Wash a car? What's that? Why would I wash a car? We were involved in community service. Our parents had us involved, that Greatest Generation. They had us involved in doing community service, going over to some old widow woman's house and raking leaves or cleaning out her gutters or whatever. We're all time involved in doing things like that. Not so much anymore. So then we get into the 60s. When the baby boomers are taking more leadership. Now, the Greatest Generation is still in charge primarily, but the boomers are coming of age. We educated, liberal, rebellious, question everything, personal gratification type boomers are now taking more leadership positions within the church. Now, enter the sexual revolution. Now, the 1960s was a tumultuous time. Protests against the war, the civil rights movement, the gay rights movement, all these things happened in the 1960s because we baby boomers, we protest everything, remember? So there were all these protests going on. There was unrest. And the true sexual revolution, as it's viewed today, begins in the 1960s, and it spread to middle and lower class America and to parts of Europe. Well, what is the sexual revolution? Well, you remember the hippies back in the 60s, make love, not war. You remember Woodstock? And I guess they're going to resurrect that project again, another big weekend of sex and drugs and rock and roll. You know, you remember Woodstock? All of this sexual immorality and questioning of the boundaries of sex and sexual activity came to be primarily in the 1960s. Now, are you saying that no one ever had sex outside of marriage before 1960? Well, of course not. You know, that's been going on for decades since the history of mankind. My goodness, King David, a man after God's own heart, got out on the balcony one day. And he was where he shouldn't be. He should have been at war, but he was staying at home at a time when kings go to war, and he looks down and he sees Uriah's wife, Bathsheba, down there taking a bath naked, and he brings her up, has sexual relations with her, gets her pregnant, and ends up having her husband killed. So, yeah, it's been going on for a long time, but it was kind of done in secret, behind closed doors. Now, all of a sudden, it's right out here in the open. The 1960s sexual revolution, right out there in the open. The first birth control pill, 1960, it's called Envoid, went on the market. Why did they need birth control pills? It wasn't for the married women who needed birth control pills. It was for the young females who were becoming sexually active during this 1960s, the high school girls and the college girls, and there was this big sexual revolution, and everybody was wanting to have sex and make love with somebody, make love and not war. And, you know, this allowed women to manage their contraception without the consent or knowledge of her partner. So she could take that birth control pill, and nobody knew she was taking birth control. The birth control pill was revolutionary to this sexual revolution. How about that? Something revolutionary to a revolution. How about that? But anyway, they could do that. Then along 1965 comes Helen Gurley Brown. Remember her? Editor-in-chief of Cosmopolitan. She changes the face of the magazine from a women's magazine written by men to one of the most widely sold women magazines ever. The New York Times described the Cosmo girl that Brown described in her magazine as a self-made, sexual, and supremely ambitious woman. She looked great, wore fabulous clothes, had an unabashedly good time when those clothes came off. And that was Cosmo. That was Cosmopolitan magazine. And our little church ladies, our Titus II women, began reading these boomers who are involved in rebellion against everything. They started reading this as the gospel instead of the Bible as the gospel. And they thought, well, it's fashionable to have sex with multiple partners. So the sexual revolution was on, and what a revolution it was. A few years later, in the 1970s, about 73, we have Roe v. Wade. And the reason we had Roe v. Wade was byproduct of the sexual revolution in that these women were getting pregnant because there was more sexual activity and they wanted to have a way to do away with these unwanted pregnancies. So Roe v. Wade comes along in the 70s, and we'll talk more about that next week because the church has basically, a lot of us buried our head in the sand about that too. It's the reason it's gotten to where it's gotten today. But that was probably the catalyst for that Roe v. Wade decision, is this sexual revolution. So was the sexual revolution something that happened out in California or New York or Chicago or Miami? Sure, but it happened right here at home too. Happened right here at home under the parents' noses of high school students engaged in this activity. And then during that sexual revolution, guess what? Modest apparel went by the wayside. Remember the woman of the 1950s? She went to church and she was dressed in modest apparel. But then in the 1960s, when the fashion trend changed and Twiggy came out with her mini skirt, now the ladies, who were formerly Titus II ladies, now they're sexual revolution ladies and they're flaunting their miniskirts at church. You say, well, you're just an old stick in the mud. You're just a prude. You're just an old-fashioned. Yeah, I'm old-fashioned. I'm old-fashioned. But the churches chose, by and large, to ignore this phenomenon. And when you ignore that, then it's going to blossom, if you will, is going to grow, and, you know, there's just no end to it. So the sexual revolution infiltrated the churches. And it's not just the kids. It infiltrated mom and dad, too, because in the 1960s, there was an explosion in the divorce rate in this country. And people took a look at these sexually explicit movies that were coming along in the 1960s. They were reading magazines like Playboy and Cosmopolitan and Hustler and all these things that were going on in the 1960s. And they thought, well, that must be okay. You know, it's okay if we have more than one sexual partner, extramarital relationships. And the churches were a breeding ground for this also, because the pastors often and the church leadership often did not address this because it was going on and we really didn't know. The church leadership really didn't know it was happening and really didn't know how to react to it. But they had people in their congregations that were engaged in premarital and extramarital sexual activity, and they didn't even know about it and didn't want to know about it. So the church buried their heads in the sand during this sexual revolution and allowed it to infiltrate the Christian church. You say, well, what do you mean infiltrate the Christian church? Well, it sneaked right in the back door. We allowed it to come into our churches. We allowed it to come into our living rooms when we, you know, watched all these R-rated videos that came in to the movies, and we went to watch those, and we had Playboy magazine and Cosmopolitan and all that, and this was going on at home. And what is the church? It's just an extension of the family. The church is not the building, people. The church is the people. It's not the building. So these folks that were looking at this sexual revolution material during the week were bringing it to church with them on Sunday. And here come the ladies who used to be dressed in their Sunday finery. Now they were in mini skirts and they were in revealing clothes, and the men were, taking a good look at it. Well, maybe Sister So-and-so looks pretty good. Maybe the pianist or maybe the youth leader, maybe she looks pretty good. And, you know, it's not wrong to have an extramarital affair, so we'll just have an affair with that. Or the teenagers look at each other, and now instead of going to ice cream socials together, they're going to a drive-in movie, and they end up in the back seat of the car. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on and on. So the sexual revolution had a profound effect on the Christian church, and the position of the Christian church in the community. You know, when the church just becomes like the rest of the world, we've lost our power, folks. You know, Jesus told us it's not to hide our light under a basket to let it shine. We're supposed to be the salt of the earth. We're supposed to season. We're supposed to flavor the earth with Christ's doctrine. But no, when we become a part of the problem, then we've lost our power as church. And no wonder people look at us and say, well, it's just they're full of hypocrites. Look at them. Look what they did. Look what they did. So it's, you know, something that we have to come to grips with. And in the 1970s, enter the megachurch. And next week, we're going to talk about that megachurch and what the baby boomers had to do with building those mega churches. Now, baby boomers have a tendency to go extreme with everything. You know, we want the biggest, the shiniest, the brightest. You know, we want a new car in the driveway, two or three new cars in the driveway. We want a big new boat. We want a big new camper. We want the best golf clubs. You know, we want the best clothes. We got to, you know, our idea is better. You know, we're educated. We know more than anybody else does. So we're going to take the leadership here and we're going to show you how it should be done. And we're going to do it regardless of whether you like it or not. And that's just the way it's going to be. So enter the megachurch in the 1970s. And we might spend a couple of episodes on the megachurch. I don't know, because the way of church growth completely changed in the 1970s. And it's changed again today when the Gen Xers and the millennialists have assumed more leadership in the church. But we're going to talk next week about the 70s and the megachurch and the baby boomers' part in building this megachurch. And was it a good thing or was it a bad thing? And, you know, we're going to let you make that decision, but we're just going to present the evidence that we have it and let you decide for yourself. Well, wow, that went by pretty quickly for me. And I'd like to have covered more ground today, but I think that's enough. You kind of get an idea of the church and the sexual revolution. And then next week, we're going to talk, Ben, about that megachurch. You don't want to miss that. Going to make some of you angry, tell you right up front that I probably made some of you angry last week, probably made some of you angry today, and I know I'll make some of you angry next week as we talk about the growth of the megachurch. Well, that's all we have time for. Thanks again for tuning in. If you liked us, please tell your friends about us. If you didn't like us, just don't listen to us again, and don't tell anybody how lousy we are, okay? But if you like us, share us, post us on Facebook, wherever. Get the word out, and we would really, really appreciate that. So, until next time, have a great week, and may God bless each and every one of you. Goodbye.